Hello, this is Rob Gellis, and tonight I'm interviewing Dawn Bronson, the town historian of Claremont in Columbia County. Thank you so much, Dawn, for coming on tonight.
Oh, I'm happy to do this. Hopefully, I can add a little bit of knowledge to everyone about Claremont, which is a very, historical town in the county, and even in the history of our country. But I feel like people don't really know that much about us.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, why don't you start and let's see how it goes.
So when people think of Claremont, they think really just of the historic site over on Route 9G. But there's a lot more to the town than just that historic site. The town was established in 1788. The name comes from the French meaning clear mountain and refers to the mountain views that surround the town. And I have to say that if anyone has, a chance to go to the historic site, it is really quite beautiful. And I know I always enjoy, even sometimes just in the winter, to drive down in there and, you can park in the parking lot. And the river is beautiful, and you see the mountains on the other side. So it really, the name really is quite fitting. Claremont is located within the 160,000-acre tract of land granted to Robert the Elder Livingston by King George I in 1686 that came to be known as Livingston Manor. The Livingstons went on to acquire even more land. They acquired about 500,000 acres of land in the Catskill Mountains, another 100,000 acres of land in Dutchess County. And it's said that, the manor actually went over into what we consider present-day Connecticut and was everything that you could see from the river over onto the west side there on the Catskills. Claremont was originally an estate of 13,000 acres separated from Livingston Manor in 1728. The town is located in southwest Columbia County and is comprised of 11,000 acres. Our town boundaries extend from the Hudson River on the west. We have about 3 miles of river frontage there, unfortunately, with no public access. The town then goes south along the Dutchess County line and east to the Roelof Jansenkill. And the Roelof Jansenkill, which is a Hudson River tributary, is partially responsible for the very irregular shape of the town. From different things that I've read, that eastern border has kind of gone back and forth between Claremont, Livingston, and Gallatin and changed a few times over the years. And that a lot of that was being driven by the fact that there's some falls at Lizaville and that people were using that for mills and power. The town borders Gallatin on the east, Livingston on the east and north, and Germantown on the northwest. And I always say, too, that I think just a regular shape kind of gives Claremont a little bit of an identity crisis, that because of the way the irregular shape and the roads, people are very confused by 9 and 9G. Children in Claremont go to Germantown, Red Hook, and Pine Plains schools. We have residents have zip codes that are Germantown, Red Hook, and Tivoli. Back when phone exchanges meant something, there were Germantown, Red Hook, and Tivoli phone exchanges. We are served by 3 different fire departments, the Claremont, Milan, and Livingston fire department. So there's a lot of disjointedness there that I think, as I said, contributes a little bit to an identity crisis for the town. And then one other interesting thing about the border is that Chancellor Robert Livingston built an elaborate French mansion that he also called Claremont, but it came also to be known as Arrow House, that's south of what we think of today as the Claremont State Historic Site House. And when he built that, it was actually in Rhinebeck in Dutchess County. And in 1799, he successfully petitioned the state legislature to change the county line so that that house would also be in Columbia County. So that's kind of an interesting thing how, you know, how the boundary lines of the town have changed over time. Claremont has about 2,200 residents and is very rural in nature with farmland and hamlets. Farming and agriculture have always been a big part of Claremont and continue to be that today. Claremont, the estate, as well as many of the other estates that later grew up along the river from that up until really, you know, right now at the north end of 9G is Oak Hill, which is also a Livingston estate and also the home of the last living Livingston. All the other homes in between have been bought up by other private property owners. Were always farms. Wheat in the beginning was a big crop, and then the Hessian fly kind of destroyed that crop and didn't make it sustainable. Rye was another crop that was there. I think when people think of Claremont in more modern terms, it's always fruit and vegetables. And a lot of that started actually with Chancellor Livingston. It said that, you know, he was one of the best farmers in the county. And when he returned from France, he was very much into developing fruit and vegetable gardens on Claremont Estate. There have been some dairy farms in the town. Right now, there is, to the best of my knowledge, one dairy farm, the Journey Dog Farm on Buckwheat Bridge Road, where they raise some cattle, chickens, and some pigs. You know, fruit and vegetables, I always think of, you know, there's names that were there several years ago and are still there today. Potts and Saulpaw, although I think Kukan is farming some of the Saulpaw property. Moore was a big name in farms over the years. So, you know, the farming is still a very big piece of Claremont and its business and industry. I read in one account, you know, there has never really been any kind of industry in Claremont except for maybe some mills that the Livingstons had going during different times. Well, they were, in the early 17 and 1800s, but it's always been farming. It's taken a little bit of a different term right now that, as I said, we only have that one dairy farm, but we also have, which is a new industry, one of our residents has a hops farm, the Germantown Beer Farm. And he's been very successful over the last several years with all the explosion of craft breweries, you know, that he's selling to them, and it's become quite a good industry there. So it's still farming, but with a little bit different term. Claremont also, interestingly, marked the northernmost penetration by British troops up the Hudson River during the American Revolution. Robert, the Judge Livingston, died in 1775 and left his wife, Margaret Binkman Livingston, and their children to face the trials of the Revolution, including the burning of Claremont and its outbuildings in October of 1777 by General John Vaughan's British troops. And it said that Margaret was aware of the advancing troops and that she hid a lot of silver and other valuables in the fountain on the property. Everything, it was really total destruction. The only thing left were the foundations and some sidewalls of the building, but she persevered and rebuilt the home on the same foundation with the same general building plan. And that's what we know today as the Claremont State Historic Site. As I mentioned, Chancellor Robert Livingston, and you really cannot talk about Claremont without talking about the Chancellor. He's probably one of our best-known residents from Columbia County. And actually, he and John Jay are the New Yorkers who were memorialized in Statuary Hall in the U.S. Capitol. Chancellor Livingston served in the Second Continental Congress. He was a member of the Committee of Five who wrote the Declaration of Independence. He was also the first U.S. Minister of Foreign Affairs, and along with Robert Fulton, negotiated the Louisiana Purchase. When the Court of Chancery was established in 1771, and that was one of the two highest courts in the state, he was appointed the first chancellor, and he held that title for 25 years. And basically, he was the highest judicial officer in the state. The most notable act that he performed as chancellor was administering the oath of office to George Washington. Chancellor Livingston is also responsible for introducing Merino sheep into the United States, and his spring shearing drew national attention and probably is the forerunner of a lot of state and agricultural fairs. And as many people know, annually in the spring there's a sheep and wool festival at the historic site, and I'm sure that you know it dates back to its founding with the chancellor's sheep shearing. And also Robert Livingston, the chancellor, along with Robert Fulton, established one of the first commercially viable steamboat lines on the Hudson. And you hear a lot about the steamship, the Clermont, which is originally known as the North River. It became known as the Clermont because it docked at the Clermont. And from what I understand, the ruins of that dock are still there on the property. And it said that on August 17th, 1807, the steamboat started her first trip up the Hudson River, leaving New York Harbor at 1 o'clock in the afternoon and arriving at Clermont 24 hours later, traveling 110 miles up the river. Robert Fulton and the steamship were actually memorialized in a postage stamp. And it's interesting, Clermont was one of the first 100 post offices commissioned in the United States, but in 1957, the post office closed. There's some controversy, but maybe an unsubstantiated rumor, that some sort of a feud between Mrs. Robert Livingston of Northwood and Mrs. C.C. Townsend, who lived at the Bowery on Buckwheat Bridge Road, had some kind of a dispute that resulted in Clermont losing its post office. But on August 19th of 1965, a temporary post office was opened at the Clermont Town Hall in order to for one day issuance of a 5-cent stamp honoring Robert Fulton and the steamboat on his 200th birthday. Clermont also has an Eleanor Roosevelt connection. Eleanor Roosevelt is also a Livingston. Her great-grandmother, Elizabeth Livingston Ludlow, was the middle daughter of Elizabeth Livingston and Edward P. Livingston. And you often hear people talking about Eleanor living with her grandmother and that they split their time between New York City and Tivoli. However, Oak Terrace, which actually many times was referred to as Oak Terrace at Tivoli, is actually located in the town of Clermont. The house went out of the family in the 1930s. It really, even at that time, when the family sold it, was in a bit of disrepair and really continued to deteriorate over the years. There's two mentions of Oak Terrace in on Eleanor's My Day column, one in 1936 where she talks about going to visit her aunt who was still living there, and another in 1949 where she and some Hyde Park neighbors and her grandchildren had a picnic on the grounds of Oak Terrace. A few years ago, a gentleman purchased the property, started doing some renovations, and he wanted to do something that it would be space for civic engagement, that he since sold the property to some other people who are also trying to restore it. I'm not quite sure what the status of it is now, but I think that would be great to restore that property. Eleanor also grew up two doors from Laura Livingston Davis, who I'm going to talk about later, and it's said that neither one of them had sisters, and that they grew up together as sisters and were very close. So that is something that, an angle that I would like to explore some more, and hopefully when COVID gets over, I'd like to go down to the Roosevelt Library and see if in any of the papers there, there's any reference to her growing up and Laura Davis. One other thing that Claremont is known for is that for the first public school in New York State, and that school was built in front of what is now the present-day Town Hall in 1791. In 1791, by a special act of the New York State Legislature, the legislature authorized the use of surplus excise revenue that was not needed to support the poor to purchase the land, erect the building, and operate a school. And the first public school was constructed by at the direction of Chancellor Robert Livingston, Samuel Tenbrook, and some other men in the community. It was, for some reason which I have not been able to determine, in 1855, that building was taken down, and what was then known as the first district school moved next door into what is the Claremont Academy, or what today is known as the Community House. Claremont Academy right now is the oldest school building in New York State. It was originally built and run as a private high school. It was built in 1834 on land donated by Edward Livingston. It is it was built by a contractor by the name of Phyllis S. Stats for under $1,500. And as I said, it originally functioned as a private secondary school, supported by tuitions. The school was on the lower floor. The upstairs, which today is still a big open space, was reserved for religious activities, and at one point was used by the Christian Endeavor Society. It today is still used as a space for religious services that the local Canaan Fellowship uses it on Sundays for their services. It's a wooden federal style two-story building, five bays with a gable roof, and it also has an octagonal cupola, and that kind of distinguishes it. As I said, the building was originally a private high school, became District 1 for the town of Claremont. And that District 1 school closed in June of 1944. The students then went to school in either Hudson or Germantown. And the building for many years was not used. In the 50s, Mrs. Townsend from the Bowery headed up a group of local residents who did a lot of fundraising and renovations and brought the building back to life. It was used for a lot of different community activities. I think a chapter of the Home Bureau met there, and it's still used today. That the Village Green Committee uses it for the Easter egg hunt, for the annual Election Day dinner, for the visit with Santa at Christmas time. So it's still an active part of the community today, which is great. Next door, just north of the town of Claremont Academy, is the Town Hall, and that building is also on the National Register of Historic Spaces. It was built in, I lost my notes here, 1894. It's a one-and-a-half-story building with a high-pitched gable roof. On the north end of the building, there was an addition, and that right now is our courtroom, but at one point in time that functioned as the firehouse. And, you know, one interesting thing I found about the town hall, and I have to say, too, I have to give credit. One of our former town historians, Ann Pleschner, wrote a little book about for the bicentennial of Claremont in 1788, and it's still a great resource. And in there, she writes that the town hall was built principally to settle the question annually discussed as to whether the polls at the elections of the town should be held at the hotel in the village of Claremont or in that of Nevis. So the town hall is it's a small, as I said, you know, 1.5-story building, and it still functions as the town hall and is also where polling for all of the town of Claremont is done today. Just north of the town hall is St. Luke's Church, also another building on the National Register of Historic Places. St. Luke's had its beginning in Claremont Academy with religious services that took place there. And Thomas Hunt, in his historical sketch of the town of Claremont, says that it was, the academy was the first building used as a church. And Judge William H. Livingston, Robert Dibley, and Harold Wilson solicited funds for the church. And in by June of 1859, they had plans drawn up by the noted Gothic Revival architect Richard Upjohn. And Judge Wilson donated the land for the church in St. Luke's Cemetery, which is behind the church. The new parish was named St. Luke's because it was on St. Luke's Day and October 18th, 1858, that the first subscription list was drawn up. The building was consecrated on St. Luke's Day in 1859. And according to the church register, the church was built at a cost of $2,400, including the land, and was consecrated on November 10th by the provisional Bishop Potter. At some point later, a parsonage was built, and that is located on Buckwheat Bridge Road, and it's a private residence at that time. The ministers who served St. Luke's, you know, came from Tivoli or Red Hook. You know, St. Luke's is kind of a little bit of an interesting church, too, because I feel as if it was closed more than it was open. And Thomas Hunt talks about that in his book, saying that he felt that that was due to the fact that there were some other more established churches around, including the Dutch Reformed Church in Germantown, the Lutheran Church in Fiumont, and the Red Church down in Tivoli. So they were always, you know, kind of competing for a relatively small population of people. And so St. Luke's opened, as I said, in 1859. And until about 1895, they had a succession of resident rectors. You know, as time went on, the church, you know, as I said, it was because it was not did not always have an active congregation, sometimes became the responsibility of Christ Church in Hudson. Sometimes it went back to St. Paul's in Tivoli, who also, that parish also had a part in the beginnings of St. Luke's. The church closed until 1926 when Reverend Clarence Quinn from St. Christ Church in Hudson was there for a while. Right, the church was closed for a number of years, and again, a lot of community members came together and opened it. The church today has never really been altered. At one point, the pews were taken out, but they've been returned. And have the baptismal fountain. It's pretty, except for the kerosene lamps that it lacks. It's pretty much a complete restoration. The church is still used today. That a few times a year we have a wedding, and it's also used at Christmas time. That the village green, as part of their visit with Santa, does some caroling over at St. Luke's Church.
Dawn, thank you so much for taking the time to have an interview about the history of the town of Claremont.